across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, September 4th, 2024. 62 days until Election Day, and it's another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, the Civic Media app, on demand by podcast, or through our social media video feeds. Nice to have you along. Thank you for starting your day right here. I got a question for you. When did Democrats become the party that's pro-business? Here's the answer. When they realized Republicans were only the party of big business, and what works for them, what works for Wall Street, isn't always, and frankly isn't often, what works for small hometown businesses on Main Street. You start paying attention to them, you do better by the economy. And Kamala Harris says a brand new proposal will hear the vice president's idea and how it ties in very nicely with what the Main Street Alliance has been talking about here in Wisconsin. And that's coming up on the program. Also, another question. Do you notice a difference from yesterday? I mean, 24 hours and some more throat coat tea and some more honey lemon lozenges, and apparently shutting up for hours at a time does the trick. So thank you again, everybody, for your indulgence yesterday as I continue to recover from this head cold. Here's what else we have coming up this morning. In this week's Climate Check, we examine the gulf between the extremism of today's right-wing politicians and typical Republican voters when it comes to the climate. The topic of climate change might not be a high priority for everyday voters, but they're not in outright denial like the extremists. And they understand that there are ideas worth pursuing because they're cleaner and they're better for the economy. So we'll talk about that with Melissa Baldoff in a little bit. In our second hour, we've got some very special guests coming up. We will talk to Dr. Jill Underley, the state superintendent of public instruction, about the start of the new school year and what is the DPI wish list for students in Wisconsin coming up this year. The U.S. Secretary of Education is in Wisconsin this week as well, so we'll talk to Dr. Underley about that. And we will catch up with former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, whose new group provides a fresh start for homeowners and others who could benefit from the funding being offered through the Inflation Reduction Act to get some beneficial energy improvement projects off the ground. It would save them some money, and it would be good for the climate as well. At any point, if you'd like to join us on the show, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-75-CIVIC. You can call the number, or you can text it, or you can use the Civic Media app to call or text us as well. And if you're watching us on Facebook or on YouTube, put a question or a comment or a hello or a recipe in the comment section, and we'll take a look and maybe pop that up on screen as well. Let's see, we're back to bus stop weather here, so let's check some 6 a.m. temperatures around Civic Media land. It's 55. It's 55 here on Lake Wissota. It is 60 in Hayward. Park Falls is at 54. Wausau is at 56. Green Bay, 54. La Crosse, 58. Wisconsin Rapids, 40. Wisconsin Rapids, Oshkosh, Madison. I didn't finish. I stopped at La Crosse, and you know why? Because I want to talk to Greg so much. Greg Bach popped in right at that moment from Waukesha.
Hello!
Before I could finish getting the temperature. So Rapids, Oshkosh, Madison, you're on your own. In Waukesha, Greg's right there, and he can tell us the temperature in beautiful downtown Waukesha is
48 degrees.
48 degrees. There we go. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm, just rocking and rolling, doing my thing. Actually, it's, Pat, I was wrong. It's not 48 degrees. It's 55 degrees.
Yeah, seemed a little low.
Yeah, doing well over here, just rocking and rolling. It's early morning. The sun is coming up. It looks like it looks kind of clear outside, so that's really nice. And getting ready for another beautiful day of radio.
another beautiful day of marathon radio as you continue to fill in for Jane Mattenair for the rest of this week as she continues her vacation. Heard Angela Lang on with you. Was that was yesterday, right?
Correct.
Yes, because that was at the start of the week. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, she's one of my favorite people that I've never met. Isn't that what Mattenair always says? It's like, oh, that's my favorite town that I've never been to.
That was
Angela Lang. Yes, from Amory. Angela Lang is my Amory, one of my favorite people I've never met, just from following her on social media and in the news. We've had her on the show a couple of times. She's been wonderful. But when she just gets to, you know, cut it loose with you in the studio, mm-hmm. it's just been absolutely delightful. And I know you've had other folks in and out of the studio, but I just had to, you know, mention hearing yesterday's show. And I'm sure you have many more interesting, fabulous, interesting topics and interesting people coming up today as well.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, Pat. I do. I have Amy Westrup, who's a friend of mine. She is a she's a consultant. She is a comedian. She's just pure business and amazing. She's that person who knows everybody. You're like, hey, I was hanging out with so-and-so. Oh, I know that guy. We went to a conference 10 years ago. I'm like, of course you do. But we're going to be talking today. It's going to be fun. She's going to be my guest co-host all morning long. So that'll be happening 10 a.m. to noon on the Civic Media Radio Network, of course. And we do miss Jane, and we're looking forward to having her back on Monday.
But again, we never begrudge taking time off. For example, yesterday, Greg yelled at me quite justifiably for not taking one more day off to recover, as I probably could have done that.
You're being very Midwest about it.
I really was very, very Gen X, early Gen X. Like, oh no, I love those like TikTok videos and things where it's like, here's somebody from my generation going, yeah, I broke both my legs and, you know, I've got a concussion, but, I'll be in by noon, you know, and then later on, it's like, I stubbed my toe. I'll see you next week. You know, and I know which end of the spectrum that I'm at, and neither one is really good. We need to do a better job of moderating work versus, you know, self-care.
Yeah.
And I'll try to do a better job the next time I get infected.
Thank you, Pat.
Yeah, happy to do that. I was not able to stick with the Brewers. I got through 7 innings and they were still tied at 3.
Yeah.
And my phone does give a little ping whenever the score changes in the game. Mm-hmm. And so I recall drifting off to sleep, hearing a little ping going, oh, I'll bet we're winning. And then at some point in the middle of the night, you know, men of my age having to wake up for, you know, various reasons, looked at my phone, realized we'd actually fallen behind in the 11th inning, but tied it back up in the 11th inning, only to lose in the 12th inning. 7-4 to the St. Louis Cardinals. I would not have known. I would not have done well staying up till 12 innings on that one.
No. I love baseball. I'm not staying up super late for baseball unless it's like a very important playoff game or the World Series. It's just no.
Tony noting on Facebook instead of YouTube. This is interesting. If you'd have taken yesterday off, you'd have never known that cold pizza was the cure to your cold. That does raise an interesting question. Mm-hmm. I did have the cold pizza right after the show yesterday.
Yeah.
And I feel much better today. We've discovered something big.
We did it. Dr. Lyerly, put away your medical degree. We are making ways in science that you'll never understand.
Cold pizza cures all. No, it didn't. But so I didn't stay up through 12, but I did want to note that the game was tied after 3. The Cards had scored in the top of the 11th. Willie Adames brought it back to even in the bottom of the 11th with a 2-out double. But then the wheels came off the bus in the 12th. There was a wild pitch. There was a throwing error. It all contributed to the Cardinals' rally. They will play one more time, 6:40 this evening. And that means a pregame is at, pull it up on the screen there, Pat. There you go, 6:05 on Civic Media Stations, WRCE in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, and WISS in Oshkosh. So that'll be this evening. The Brewers will have tomorrow off, but they stay home for 3 more games this coming weekend against Colorado. And again, a reminder that Friday evening's game has been moved up 2 hours. First pitch is now at 5:10 on Friday evening to make way for the Green Bay Packers, who open up the season in Brazil this Friday on the Peacock. not the Hulu, not the Netflix, not the Apple TV, but on the Peacock, which I've got, but now I've got until kickoff to determine whether it's worth signing up for a paid subscription plan or not. So how badly do I want the football season to start this weekend?
Really bad if you're getting Peacock. I mean, how many, I always like to know that. How many networks is it going to be on this season now? I mean, is Peacock just the opening? Is it the special thing, or is it going to be a lot of games? It's like we talked about yesterday. It's becoming a frustrating thing, I'm sure, for sports. As a baseball fan, I never know what anything is on, and I don't have any of those stations anyways because most times it's blacked out.
Yeah. I mean, there should be, if you have the rights to something, you should say, okay, you guys can have this, but we're reserving something for ourselves as well, so that if somebody really wants to pay for it, we'll give you one place where you can catch every game for a price, but one place, none of this monkeying around with streaming services, and we'll call it cable. And we'll just let you go there.
Or just call it the NFL Network. Just seriously, yeah. Just have it all there. Yeah.
Exactly. Tony noting online, blackouts should be illegal.
Agreed.
Couldn't agree more. Alicia writes in, congratulations, the common cold has been cured for our cold pizza thing. And by the way, I was so discombobulated yesterday. We need a Dan Schaefer in here, but I was so discombobulated. I missed a note on the text line from Lynn in Oconomowoc, so I need to thank her. Probably next hour. I don't know if she's listening this early, but talked about testing positive for COVID a couple of weeks back, and that DayQuil was her saving grace. Chloraseptic spray, lozenges are now a permanent component of her travel kit. But then she also says, hydrogen peroxide is always on my sink for scratchy throat, cuts, bug bites, and stains on clothes. I don't know how I feel about that.
Me either. Very confused yet intrigued.
Yeah, I mean, I know hydrogen peroxide is one of those things touted as like it can do anything for everything, but scratchy throats? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. And Tony, you're right. Only diehard fans listen at 6:06. Only fans. Not anybody that has to be up early for an actual job or something involving, I don't know, milking cows or whatever reason we have to be up as ungodly early as we are. But here we are. Here we are.
Tony with the big words there. All right. He's throwing the gauntlet down.
No, we appreciate it. Hey, there's a lot to cover. Always, there's a lot to unpack in the news. We'll talk about President Biden coming to Wisconsin tomorrow. Now, former President Trump is coming to Wisconsin on Saturday. So much more to cover. But first, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Fleetwood Mac's self-titled album is part of today's history lesson. Learn more of the details coming up in about 30 minutes here on Up North News Radio. All right, a lot of ground to cover here in 8 minutes and 45 seconds before we have today's climate change. So let's dive right into it. First off, I saw a new series of polls from swing states around the country. One of them shows Vice President Kamala Harris is up by 6 points in Wisconsin. Free advice. If you ever take a poll and it shows a 6-point difference in a swing state like Wisconsin, start over. There is no way a presidential election is going to have a 6-point margin in this state, in this era. It's not going to happen. If you see that, you did something wrong. Go back and make your sample size bigger or ask some new questions. Don't even put a 6-point poll out there. A 6-point difference in polling among Wisconsin voters, you're not helping your credibility at all. President Biden will be making an official trip to Westby tomorrow in Vernon County, just outside of La Crosse. It is an official trip, not a campaign trip, where he is highlighting Inflation Reduction Act investments at the local level, something we will be talking to former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes about in our next hour. Former President Donald Trump, meanwhile, is coming to Mosinee this Saturday for a rally. Not his first, second, maybe not even his third time at the Central Wisconsin Airport, where it's very easy to park that jet that other people are paying for and make a speech in a hangar and then hop back on the plane and head out someplace else. There is a story in The Guardian about Tammy Baldwin, about her appeal to rural voters across Wisconsin, the secret of her success. The Wall Street Journal has a similar story about Tammy Baldwin's appeal. Why is she doing so well in polls? Why are there so many, as The Guardian calls it, why are there so many Tammy Trump voters? But there always has been. There have always been people that vote primarily Republican, but Tammy is somebody that gets their vote on the Democratic side. And I think you and I both know the answer. It's because she's willing to work hard and be a good listener. There's no mistaking that Tammy Baldwin has liberal beliefs and would you know, pursue a liberal agenda. But you do that in a way that, again, isn't my way or the highway. It's you listen to other people's concerns, wherever they are, whatever they do. And if they have an idea that makes sense, you pursue it. And that's what Tammy Baldwin has always done. And our friend Hans Breitenmoser is quoted in the article as well from The Guardian, this London-based newspaper. Hans says that Tammy has, quote, never shied from going out into the countryside. I think her message has resonated to an extent because it's not just all BS. She tries to understand the issues and understands the issues at a level that some other politicians don't. And then it kind of goes on to talk about Baldwin's current lead over Eric Hovde in the polls. Eric Hovde has some more new TV commercials out that I noticed on TV here in the Chippewa Valley this morning. And again, they're just so amazingly generic and bland. And you just envision a moderate voter, a Republican-leaning moderate voter, walking up to Eric Hovde and saying, do you have any original thought or idea? Do you do anything that isn't just complaining? You can't just complain about inflation and just complain about the border in a state that's like 2,000 miles from the border. Do you have anything else that's particular to Wisconsin where you're going to help families? And if you don't, then save your money. I feel like there's probably more than a few right-leaning moderate voters saying, look, I would be happy to vote for a Republican alternative to Tammy Baldwin, but you're not providing it at all. Meanwhile, the state's other senator, Republican Ron Johnson, is saying that he supports IVF as long as, you know, somebody else can get stuck with the bill. There's an Associated Press story out there about the number of Republican politicians who are either, depending on your point of view, trying to take a moderate stance on IVF or trying to have it both ways. You know, they're putting their name on bills that would support the concept of fetal personhood, which would, of course, wipe out in vitro fertilization efforts. They sign their names to those bills, but then they say they're pro-IVF anyway. And in the AP story, Ron Johnson shares his daughter's IVF experience and says he fully supports IVF, but he says he's not completely sold on former President Donald Trump's proposal, where he says the government will pay for IVF, will make sure that health insurance pays for IVF. The kind of thing where it sounds like Trump made it up on the spot to make it sound like he's in favor of IVF, even though he's also the guy that brags about overturning Roe v. Wade. And so it's not fully fleshed out yet. And Johnson jumps on that and says he's not completely sold on Trump's proposal due to its possible price tag. Johnson says, quote, I would need to see cost estimates, impacts on insurance rates, etc., before making any decisions or commitments to support any proposal. Republican lawmakers, the story says, have historically opposed federal funding to cover health care, including by repeatedly attempting to undo the Obama-era Affordable Care Act, and so they may be unlikely to support other plans that use federal funding to cover health care, including in vitro fertilization. Vice President Kamala Harris has some new ideas that she's going to share today in New Hampshire, as the vice president moves beyond the usual swing states, beyond the usual blue wall, to talk about a big new proposal for small businesses. The vice president is going to propose today a tenfold increase in federal tax incentives for small business startup expenses. Right now, the federal tax incentive for small business startup expenses is $5,000. She wants to grow that tenfold to $50,000, hoping that that will spur a record 25 million new small business applications over the next 4 years if she should win the presidency. Now, this would probably require congressional approval, but Congress has to talk about these things anyway because the 2017 Trump tax cuts for the very wealthy are about to expire. And it's going to blow a hole in the budget if Trump wins and again wants to give substantial tax decreases to the very rich and to the biggest companies. Vice President Harris is saying, let's focus on small business. Let's really provide incentive for people to start up their own shop, hang their own shingle, and then hire people. And it is so very much in line with what Democrats are doing around the country for small business, including and especially Tony Evers right here in Wisconsin, who took that Main Street Bounce Back Grant program and said, how about if we give $10,000 in pandemic relief, $10,000 to small businesses who occupy what would otherwise be vacant storefronts on the main streets of Wisconsin's hometowns, and $10,000 grants to 10,000 small businesses, or very nearly 10,000 small businesses. That's how you do it. You don't throw $3 billion at Foxconn and say, gosh, I hope this works out. It's taking care of the small, local, hometown businesses that grow jobs in our local economies. Democrats get that. Republicans continue to be just looking out for Wall Street. We'll have our climate check with Melissa Baldoff. What happens to the Inflation Reduction Act and all those incentives if Republicans were to sweep everything this November? That's next. You're up north. It's electric. All right, we're back now at 6:34 on this Wednesday morning. 62 days until the presidential election. What's at stake? The health of our planet, for example, is one of those things, and we check on it every Wednesday in our climate check report with Melissa Baldoff. Melissa, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Okay, well, good to have you here. Hope you had a good weekend. So let's just jump right into things here, and we're going to talk about there's a disconnect, not a massive one, but a disconnect just the same, that where Republican politicians are when it comes to what seems to be rather extreme views on climate, almost denialism. Well, outright denialism in some cases.
I would say it is denialism.
Yeah, it is.
I would say it is.
Yep. That doesn't mean that that's where their voters are, which, you know, tells you how extremism can be rewarded in politics sometimes. So before we get back to, you know, what Republicans would do if they were to get fully in power in November, let's look at the actual voters themselves. And we get a read on it from the Pew Research Center. Pew has done, you know, numerous polls over the years on all kinds of issues. And I guess we'll start with the common ground that not a ton of Republican voters say climate change should be a top priority. And that's unfortunate, Melissa.
I think it is very unfortunate because we know and we've talked about many times how climate change impacts so many aspects of our lives. You know, this is something that is it's a quality of life issue because it impacts the environment. It impacts our natural spaces and people's ability to participate in, the kind of leisure activities that we all enjoy and, you know, enjoy the outdoors and, you know, hunt and fish and, you know, get out on recreational trails and ski and get out on the water and all those things people enjoy. It impacts our health. We know that air quality and water quality are an issue. It's an economic issue because we have, economic threats when we have our farmers and producers whose crops are threatened, whose way of life is threatened, when we have people who are sick from those, air and water quality, issues and they're missing work. So it's really unfortunate that people don't look at it as, you know, kind of that, you know, that dual track of, yes, the negative impacts are incredibly harmful. And then this, you know, positive way forward creates incredible opportunity for everybody to benefit. There's room in that clean energy economy for everyone to benefit, every community to grow, and for so many communities who have been harmed, including, you know, a number of rural communities and folks who have been left behind and felt left behind, have that opportunity to grow and thrive and to really see a lot of benefit. So it's very unfortunate that, you know, I would say that people have been, I would say, really deceived by people like Donald Trump who are out there calling climate change a hoax.
Yeah. I mean, to look at it, you know, by the numbers, if you look at the general population, about 36% say dealing with global climate change should be a high priority. Among Democrats and left-leaning independents, it's more like 60% say this should be a high priority. When it comes to Republicans and Republican-leaning independents, only 12% say that dealing with global climate change should be a big priority. Now, to put this in perspective, that's pretty much the same as the just 14% of Republicans who say addressing race issues should be a high priority. So we see what they've been fed in terms of a steady stream of messaging from right-wing media. However, when you look at the actual proposals to address climate change, it does turn out that there is Republican support in the general public for doing some of the things that could address climate change. And as we've said several times here, Melissa, it could just be that it's good for the economy, or it just sounds like a good idea, even if climate change isn't a high priority. There are things that the Republican population says, well, these are still good ideas to put in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, before we move into those specific ideas, one other thing I want to point out in that kind of more general overview, you know, you pointed out that, you know, the Republicans and Republican leaners, only 12% say dealing with climate change is a priority. 84% said strengthening the economy was a priority. Well, dealing with climate change is certainly going to strengthen our economy. So then you kind of get into, like you said, you know, these more specific, you know, proposals where people, we did find a lot of common ground, you see, in this polling. And we've talked about this before. And, you know, I'll say it again. This is very similar to what we saw with Obamacare, where people, it had been, you know, really the concept had been really politicized for them. And overall, they would say, oh, I don't like it. But then when they would hear about those specific provisions, they really liked those. And I think that's a lot of what we see now. Overall, people might say, oh, I don't know about this, you know, whole, you know, clean energy business, this climate change business. But when they hear about things like, you know, planting a trillion trees to absorb carbon emissions, you know,
look at that one alone, that top one where there's a big match, 91% of Democrats, 87% of Republicans say planting about a trillion trees to absorb carbon emissions, that's a good thing, that they think that's a good idea. Same goes for requiring oil and gas companies to seal any methane gas leaks from their wells. 93% of Democrats say, yeah, that's a good idea. 77% of Republicans, it still should be higher, but still, you know, it's something that is there. You get more than a majority, two-thirds, in fact, of Republicans say that you should, it would be a good idea to provide a tax credit to businesses for developing carbon capture or carbon storage. And then all the other ideas that come up, they get 50% support or less. But the fact that there are still some things above 50%, Melissa, or at least that's the toehold when it comes to making substantive policy changes next year.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think that it is really encouraging to see that there are some areas where, you know, there is common ground. But, you know, the important distinction is, you know, this is a survey of the population. This is not of Republican elected officials. And this is not of the ones who have the will to get something done. Because we don't always see that the will of the people becomes the law of the land here, unfortunately. If that were the case, if the will of the people was the law of the land, things would look a lot different in this state and in this country.
Well, especially by age, you know, we're in one of the polling areas that Pew looked at, younger Republicans are far more likely than older ones to say that human activity contributes to climate change. So you are seeing that progress from a generational standpoint. The problem, of course, is that by the time you get more widespread acceptance of what is going on, it's, you know, the clock has been ticking on whether anything you can do might be too late.
Exactly. And, you know, one thing I also thought was interesting about this poll is that it does seem that there's this, you know, kind of, you know, hesitance among Republicans about growing renewable energy sources, and a little concern about that transition, because, you know, they do support expanding some renewable energy sources, but they also support expanding fossil fuels. So it's kind of like, well, you know, we're okay with growing renewables, but we do want to still grow fossil fuels. So it's kind of like, we don't want to wean off the one in favor of the other. But the whole point is we need to phase out the fossil fuels and, you know, rapidly grow the renewables.
No,
so that's,
I can't quit you, fossil fuels. Seems to
exactly
be what you're saying.
But, you know, there is the inroad that where in the past we have seen that there had been maybe a little bit of hostility, you know, more concern from some Republicans about, you know, solar and wind power. And, you know, there was some pretty robust disinformation messaging around some of those technologies. At least we are seeing that opening, that there is support for those. Now we just need to make sure that we can get people to where we want to see that real growth among the renewables, and, you know, really wean this country off of the fossil fuels that are what's providing, you know, what's contributing to those dangerous emissions.
But all of that search for common ground could be undone if Republicans were to sweep the White House, the House, and the Senate this November. And these are things that we have talked about before. You would allow more pollution from diesel trucks. You would strip away protections for imperiled species. You would open up more federal lands to oil drilling. The Washington Post quotes one of the Trump administration's former directors at the Bureau of Land Management as saying, quote, "To say climate change is the biggest threat to humanity is absolutely insane." That's an actual quote from somebody who was a top Trump aide, which just tells you how wide the gulf is from a politician standpoint and how high the stakes are, Melissa.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You know, as much as Donald Trump and Republicans want us to believe that, you know, Project 2025 is not his plan for another term in office, you know, we know that that's what it is. And we've seen what they're talking about. And, you know, what's truly insane here is to think about the continuation of what Donald Trump did previously and the gutting of everything that Joe Biden has done. You know, they believe that what President Biden has done is just to spend a bunch of money solving a problem that doesn't exist. They believe that, you know, this, all of the investment in clean energy jobs, in, you know, creating opportunities for our schools to make investments for cleaner technology, safer, healthier building spaces that save money on operational costs, that money can be reinvested back into the classrooms, you know, for electric buses for our kids to ride on, to reduce emissions, all of the ways that we are seeing people save money on their energy costs and weatherizing their homes. You know, they think that these are all just a waste of money to address a fake problem. And that's what's insane. They want to undo all this progress. And that's what'll happen.
And in fact, the guy
back in office,
the guy, the administration official I mentioned earlier, he actually wrote the chapter in Project 2025 about the U.S. Interior Department. And it recommends, again, increasing oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico and the Arctic wilderness, slashing the fees that fossil fuel companies pay to drill on public land, and provide legal protection for energy companies that unintentionally kill birds, you know, and other other wildlife. It is just basically, you could not have written this better if you were in the boardroom of one of these big oil companies, which, again, that's fine. That's their position. But to have that be the position of the federal government on behalf of all Americans, including those Republican Americans that understand that the climate is changing and that while maybe it's not their top priority, it's still a big thing. It just, again, goes to underscore the importance of voting not with, you know, Republican promises of moderation in mind, but what the actual blueprint is that they have put in writing, which would guide a second Trump term. So having explained that gulf between the voter and the politician, Melissa, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
And don't forget, Mandela Barnes will be along in our next hour to talk about home rebates through the Inflation Reduction Act that could lower your utility bills and stop any of your contribution to a changing climate. We'll have today's history lesson coming up next. This is Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Melissa Kay has got the Beyonce dance. Oh, look at that, Greg. Greg's got it as well.
Woohoo!
Man,
oh,
man.
Pat, that was a nice little, what was that there?
Do we know how to celebrate Beyonce's birthday or what? Ms. Knowles is 42 years old today, native of Houston, Texas. Previously of Destiny's Child. And look, if Destiny's Child had never broken up with Beyonce, had never gone on to a solo career, she'd still be as big a star. They were going places. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the story behind why she went solo. I'm just saying, Beyonce would be a part of our lives, like it or not. She's a force.
I have a feeling that Destiny's Child was a stepping stone for her, and all of the members were told, look, you're great.
Let me introduce you to the Supremes without Diana Ross.
To my daughter, she's going to be the one who's the star.
Yep.
Good job.
Thanks anyway. Melissa Kay joins us from locally grown radio WFHR Wisconsin Rapids. How are you?
Good morning. Glad to be here. Barely made it.
Yeah. You have a good holiday weekend?
No.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
Yes, but no.
Well, no. We spent all day yesterday talking about my miserable weekend being sick. So since misery loves company, go on.
No, I did get to go visit with my girlfriends from high school down in Madison, so that was good. Okay. The rest of it just got usurped by things that I didn't plan for and didn't want to do. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, life. Yep. How fun. Life.
Yeah, it happens. It shouldn't happen on a holiday weekend, but, you know.
Didn't get my shed scraped, Greg. You didn't show up with your paint scraper.
Oh, no, he didn't.
That's a very weird sentence to say out loud. And he was okay.
And by the way, just to be clear, he was never going to.
I know.
But, you know, we have
one can always remain hopeful.
I know.
If I showed your house today and be like, I'm here to scrape your shed.
The shed is right there.
Okay, that normally gets windows. A call to the cops at this point, going, there's a man at my door with a scraper saying, "Here, I'm here to do a number on your shed." I'm like, no, we're calling the sheriff's department. To the history books now, on this day in 1957, the governor of Arkansas called out the National Guard to prevent 9 African-American students from enrolling in Little Rock Central High School. Before long, President Eisenhower would federalize the Arkansas National Guard and order it to protect the students and allow them to enter back in 1957.
Good job,
Eisenhower. Good use of power.
Let's do the number one album and the number one single from this day in 1976, starting with the number one album, the self-titled album from Fleetwood Mac.
That intro.
That's what I was going to say. There's several different songs in today's that Single Ladies was one of them. Rihanna here is another one. You're going to know it right away. So anyway, the album had been out for nearly a year, but reached number one on this day in 1976 with other hits like Over My Head and Say You Love Me. And we'll hear a little bit more from this album coming up this morning. On this day in 1951, Frank Sinatra played Las Vegas for the first time, performing at the Desert Inn Hotel and Casino. By 1959, he is the city's top draw. And wouldn't it be fun just to see the photos of what the Vegas Strip looked like in 1951? When it basically looked like something out of a Roadrunner cartoon, you know?
Right. So much crammed into one street and then nothing outside of it.
Yeah, nothing whatsoever.
I saw a picture that advertised the real estate that was to become Las Vegas for sale, I think in like the 20s or something, for like $3 million.
Desert.
Yeah. Yep. Well, you know what? That paid off pretty well.
Yeah.
That was the gamble that worked for some. Yes, exactly, for some. Back to 1976, the number one song this day was by the Bee Gees. See, I told you, iconic intros today. So what you should know is that this song was not created for the soundtrack of Saturday Night Fever. That movie wouldn't come out for almost another year. And the makers of the movie putting together the soundtrack said, that one needs to be in here. And it did pretty good. On this day in 1971, a little bit of music history, there was this Bruce Springsteen show going on in Asbury Park, New Jersey. And it's really when the E Street Band came together, because there was this saxophone player named Clarence Clemons who joined the band on stage for the first time. And can you just imagine that moment, you know, where Clarence comes on and plays and jams with the band, and you can see the rest of the band looking at each other going, yep, this is it. This is the one. It reminds me of Greg and I love to talk about Michael McDonald. And the first time that Michael McDonald came in for the Doobie Brothers, and like as soon as they heard what came out of his mouth, the rest of the band was like, yep, you're in. That's it. Yep. Welcome.
And Steely Dan.
You know, Melissa was the same. Melissa did not even fill out a job application. She walked in with this effervescent personality. They're like, you're our Clarence Clemons. You're in.
Kinda.
See?
There you go.
The number one song this day in 1982 was by the Steve Miller Band. Again, intros. You play Name That Tune with these songs, you're going to, you know, I can name this in one note.
Can I tell a fun story real quick about my mom and Steve Miller in this song?
Sure.
She made herself a cassette of all of her favorite Steve Miller songs. And on side A, we're like, you know, the 70s, all the 70s songs we all know and love. And then side two is just Abracadabra on repeat.
I love your mom.
Jackie Bond.
On this day in 1888, George Eastman registered the name Kodak as a trademark and got a patent for his camera that used rolls of film this day in 1888. And a little TV history. It was on this day in 2002 that Kelly Clarkson and Justin Guarini were the finalists in the first ever season of American Idol. Here's how it ended.
The winner of American Idol 2002 is...
Of course, it's a reality show, so we have to wait.
Drama! Drama! Make,
yeah, yeah.
Kelly
Come on!
Clarkson.
And
they were going to cheer no matter what.
Oh, yeah, but that worked out pretty well for her, too. Okay, Melissa, so nice to see you here. Anything mm-hmm. we need to know that you're working on really quick?
You know, just working hard behind the scenes, still trying to get my show off the, I don't know, it's haunches. We're getting there. Still squatting, but we're making progress.
Good luck with that. Good luck, Melissa. We love her. All right, you have a great day. Much you're more, too. Mandela.